And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, proud citizen of a town with breathtaking civic activism, Guelph. I'm trying to give a little teaser what's to come, so it's breathtaking.
Yes, it is breathtaking.
Just like the view of Basilica of Church of Our Lady.
We have later in the show.
Yes.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will have an exclusive interview with Skeena Bulkley Valley MP, NDP leadership candidate, and electoral reform advocate Nathan Cullen. Cullen was in Guelph last Thursday to rally support for electoral reform and has an upcoming vote in the House of Commons on the special committee report. And he didn't have to rally hard, as you can imagine. And then we will
It was breathtaking how
little he had to work. And then we will keep it in the House of Commons when proposed changes the Liberals have made to the rules and functioning of Parliament, which has not been well received by the opposition parties. But then again, what could? We'll dig into the changes and tell you what all the fuss is about. And finally, in money matters, we'll look at two groups of people with controversial salaries. One is the executives of Bombardier, and the other is the annual publication of the Ontario's Sunshine List. But first, the Conservative leadership candidates debated again this past Sunday. This one was a bus ride away in Toronto at the Eglinton Theatre, just a short 10-minute subway ride from Union Station, so I decided to go and see it in person, take the temperature of the crowd, and hear from the candidates in person. So, Scotty, ask me anything.
Well, Adam, tell us about your... I have written here Adam's field trip, which is kind of cool. And they actually... It was an invitation. They asked you to come. I got that right?
Like they said, no, they didn't ask me to come. I asked to go, and then they send you an invitation. It was this weird thing where they had the RSVP email address on the Facebook page.
Yep.
And so I emailed them. And then they said, oh, we're already full, so we'll keep you on the waiting list. And then, like, 4 days...
You're standing outside behind the velvet rope, right? Like,
maybe.
Pouring rain.
But... No, well, it was a nice day. But, yeah, and then about 4 days later, they sent the invite and said, okay, there's space, you're invited.
Awesome. So tell us about your field trip. You got up close and personal to the candidates. Did you speak to anybody directly, or was it just that kind of free-for-all? Was it a mixer? Tell us how it went.
It was
my interview skills. Tell us about the thing.
Well, there was a mixer part because it's a converted movie theater, so the front lobby area was like clearly designed to, you know, where you go and get your tickets, and then head to the back and line up to get your popcorn, and then go into the theater. So they had like a little area in the lobby where the various candidates had tables set up, and you can get, you know, their literature.
Also, tabling, and were any of them with the tables, or was it just for like take our stuff and.
Yeah, a little bit before. Beforehand, everybody was kind of laying low. But, I mean, it wasn't a great place to mingle because there wasn't a lot of room. But everybody had surrogates at their table and volunteers who, you know, are trying to promote their candidate. So it was good. I collected some literature and
some
pamphlets. Nice. I did not go so far as to buy a Kelly Leach t-shirt, which were available.
Oh, I would have slid you some money. Who's got her with her, like, Walther PK on the, like, the gun on the...
They were very, like... Choo, choo. They were very, you know, any t-shirt you could imagine for any volunteer sort of thing was just, like, a logo. And it
says,
like,
Kelly!
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, so then nothing. You'll see them in Value Village in 6 months.
Oh, no
maybe
doubt.
Maybe less.
No doubt.
I've seen, I think, every shirt there.
Sure.
So there's a bit of tabling going on, and how long was the debate? Oh, and you should talk about the fact that somebody was conspicuous by their absence.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. I don't think that was much of a surprise that Kevin O'Leary wasn't there. He didn't even have a table there, which was
peculiar. But yet he's still touted to be in the top five. Eh? Like, he hasn't...
Yeah. His name
just has to show up, and then he...
Pretty much. I mean, I'm actually kind of glad he wasn't there, because I feel like anytime he shows up, he's a suck, because they've not only got to debate the issues in the short time window, they also have to acknowledge the presence of the front runner, who really isn't working terribly hard for his front runner status. He just kind of seems to get it. But I mean, the
you consider O'Leary the front runner. It's not Bernier, or are they neck and neck? Or
well, I think by the numbers, yeah. O'Leary. If you look at the poll numbers, O'Leary is the front runner.
Mm.
It's interesting to actually be there because if you looked at like who's got support and who has like turnout support, it is Bernier, and Bernier more than that has young support. Like, all the young people there, or almost all the young people there, were Bernier boosters.
Really?
Yeah. Including the people in MAGA hats.
Oh. Did you get any pictures?
Laura Stone from the Globe posted. Oh, she was
montage?
There.
Hmm.
Well, she was there. I think she's doing a profile of Kelly Leach. And so she was kind of following Kelly Leach around, but she took a picture and posted on Twitter and like, hey, these guys in MAGA hats were like harassing me about fake news and they were Bernier supporters. And then I think she said later on that the Bernier camp, you know, apologized
Bernie
on behalf
like,
of
I have
the,
no idea who these people
the Bernier bros. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Going back to the O'Leary thing, yeah, he by the numbers, he's the front runner. But I mean, he's also got a ceiling. I don't think I've seen his numbers go above 23-24%. So,
which is impressive considering that he's a new arrival, like not only just. The
just
last
visiting.
To enter the race, yeah, just visiting, last to enter the race, but he doesn't have a seat. I don't think he's done any time in the trenches for the Conservatives other than, you know, just sort of tacit support.
No, and
so
I think
that's pretty incredible, really.
It's all on name value, but I mean, that's not going to matter much when you start getting into second and third ballots.
No.
And people are going to start coalescing behind the not O'Leary candidate, whoever that is, if it's, you know, Bernier or O'Toole. Leach,
or,
even.
Yeah, and with O'Toole, Leach, Bernier, O'Leary, and possibly Scheer might be in the top five, eh?
Scheer held his own. I think... I don't remember anything terrible. Even Leach seemed to... I think...
She toned down the rhetoric a bit, or is
it
still up there?
It was a bit toned down, yeah. Either because she knew the audience, or because she...
It's Toronto. It's those Toronto types.
Yeah, because she kind of... I mean, it's kind of her backyard, but... It's... The
cottagers all come from there.
You know, and I think... very true. But I think some of the candidates took a couple of jabs at her right off the top, and when she didn't take the bait, either because she's, like, used to this by now, or somebody on her team said, like, don't take the bait whenever they're going to go for you if O'Leary isn't here, so don't take the bait. So to her credit, it was kind of a low-key thing for her.
So, and Joe Oliver, was he the master of ceremonies? Like, did he run the debate, or did somebody else, but he was just like...
No, he was the moderator.
I'm Crabby Joe Oliver, and here's me.
No, he was the moderator.
Oh, there you go.
I think he did a pretty good job. I'll give him that credit. There was so much verbal fluffing, let's say, of not just Joe Oliver, but of Jim Flaherty, too. There was so much of it.
Was that his turf? Oh, yeah, he was. No, he was Oshawa?
I don't think he was. Yes, he was Oshawa.
Yes, yeah.
But, I mean, it's just like, well, we're going to go in and balance the budget again, just like the late, great Jim Flaherty did. Andrew Sexton, by the way, like, every opportunity he could, like, work in that he was on, like, the parliamentary committee with Joe Oliver when they were passing the budget.
He was his secretary?
Yeah.
Secretary? Yeah.
So, like, he worked that in all the time.
Hey, if you got the card, play it, right? Play that card. Play it again.
Oh, he was playing it. But, yeah, there was a lot of that. There's a lot of, you know, not too much about how they inherited a surplus, drove into a deficit, and then, you know, basically
we're
throwing things overboard to to get back to
bail.
to black. But, yeah, there was a lot of that. We're going to, you know, bring things back, and then to various degrees. It is interesting that I, you know, seeing the debate from beginning to end, you do sort of see the nuances, and, you know, you have Bernier, who's like, I'm going to cut things by 30%, I'm going to cut tax by 30%, and then you have, you know, someone
no
like...
No government at all.
Yeah.
I'm just going to step down, and you guys can just do what you want.
And you have...
Just laissez-faire, baby. Yeah. That's the impression I get from Bernier. It's like, they keep saying... Not even self-declared. It's like the libertarian candidate. It's like, so you know exactly what you're getting. Yeah. Chop, chop, chop.
But then you have Michael Chong, who gets up and he says, like, This was the amazing thing that I took note of. Perhaps not the amazing thing, but one of the amazing things was they had a whole climate change discussion where no one tried to hoaxify a climate change.
Well, it's Toronto. You can't.
Right.
Like, it's not possible.
Still, I mean, it's nice to see, given what's happening other places. But, Michael Chong gets up and he goes, you know what? Anyone who doesn't think that the best way to address climate change is carbon tax isn't a real conservative.
Ooh,
and everyone's
them's
like,
fighting words.
And so,
audible
yeah,
gasp?
a little bit. There
somebody
was a little bit of audible,
went, oh,
audible
well,
gasp.
I
it
never.
Was interesting.
Yeah.
Because, it was, that was a moment, and then everyone kind of kept coming back to that, and, but it was mostly cordial. There was something at the end where, like, Steve Blaney said something to Bernier in French that I didn't catch because I'm not a great French speaker.
Sweary or no?
I don't think it was sweary, but it was,
Was there translation available, or?
Well, not in the audience, but I think for
was
the
Was there signing?
No, I don't believe
there was
there
no
was.
Signing.
No.
I'm trying to touch all the bases. So no signing, no French translation in the audience.
No.
And there's my other question along that line of questioning. Are you now or have you? No, I... oh, it was... Did they talk about immigration?
Yeah.
They did?
Yeah.
Did it go towards the nasty or was it just sort of general Canadian values?
I didn't go to the nasty. Mm. I mean, the immigration question, I think, was about the illegal at the border crossing things, and basically it was it was as much about Trudeau bashing as we've got to give the RCMP the resources it needs, and about Trudeau laid out a yellow brick road for people with a tweet by trying to show up Trump, and I think there's probably a case you can make for that that's not entirely wrong. So I think a lot in terms of that kind of red meat, there wasn't a lot of red meat. It was a very state affair. And I think that's, again, because we had...
O'Leary absent?
Part with O'Leary of that. Absent. I mean, with the exception of Rick Pearson, it was all, natural-born politicos.
Ah.
And so, and even Rick Pearson, who is not a well-known name.
Yeah, tell us a bit about him, because I didn't really...
He's a Vancouver businessman. He, mm-hmm. He's in the race basically saying, we're losing women, we're losing minorities, we're losing young people. We are seen as a party that's racist and not urban and...
so he's a moderate.
Not with it. And, we need to modernize. And that's kind of his... where he's coming from. He's kind of like the anti-O'Leary in that he's kind of everything O'Leary has except the celebrity card, and I haven't done too much research into him, but he seems like an accomplished businessman who cares about his business more than his celebrity value. He got the O'Leary by virtue of being the first one to speak during the opening rounds, because O'Leary's excuse was that he had to spend time with his wife. It was his wife's birthday or something. Although it didn't stop him from being on MSNBC that day.
Like physically there, or did he Skype it in? I mean, I know
on MSNBC.
Yeah.
I think it was from like the Miami studio.
From Studio at H. And yeah.
But still, he's the first one to get a jab at Rick Pearson, saying, well, like, I'm here with my wife today too. And then he had his wife stand up to take a bow. So, and then. So he was interesting because of, we don't know much about him because he's not a politician. And then another person who was interesting was Deepak Obre, who was like
kind
of the comic relief by the end of it. And I don't mean to disparage him. I mean that he was kind of a rogue element. And by the time we got to near the end of the debate, he, anytime he got up, people started like, like, what's he going to say this time?
And he doesn't seem like an old reformer either, but that's where he came from, right? He started off with reforms.
No, so he doesn't seem
he's been
like
around
that.
For a while. Like,
yeah.
Probably longer than most of the people there. Next to, say, Lisa Raitt and maybe Michael Chong, but...
I would have to double check, but I would say,
He's a known, anyways.
He's been around for a while, but,
reform's been gone for a while, so, yeah.
But at one point, it was like the second to last question he gets up, and he's like, by the way, we don't have any like closing statements, so I'm going to make my closing statement now. And then he was talking about, like, go to my website, deepackage.com or whatever it
People
was.
Going, Deepak.
And yeah, I mean, so he doesn't have a chance, but I mean, he's a great character to have around, I think, because he's, if you are looking to sort of rebrand the party, it is to be a little less in the Harper mold. This is probably someone you want to keep front and center, and I hope they do keep him front and center.
Love to have him on the show, and we have sort of an announcement. Can we announce we might have somebody on the show?
Well, we'll save it for the end of the show.
We'll save it for the other show.
We'll make people stick around
surprise
for the whole show.
Announcement. So you have to keep listening now. God. No choice.
Like, well, we know people aren't not going to listen to the whole show, but you know, if we can like it's encourage always, you
yes.
to stick it out, like maybe you want to go and start making dinner or something, or maybe you're like 5 minutes away from home and you're in your car, but like maybe take another drive around the block and you know see what happens. So
Adam's going to tell us about Field Trip 2, which is a bit more locally. Just took 12 transit to this one. I'm not sure which bus, but not the big bus to Tirana.
Double decker bus. Well, it's double decker bus to square one, and then
did you get that great seat on the top of the?
Oh, that's dope.
It's the best.
But
we loves our public transit on this show.
Yes, and this was with Nathan Cullen. An interview I did with Nathan Cullen after he was in Guelph last Thursday. He's doing a 20-city tour of various liberal ridings to see if he can rally support for a vote. He was one of the people who was part of the special parliamentary committee to explore electoral reform options. And obviously that went nowhere fast, but I mean, the vote is on the report is coming up in the House at the end of May. So he was making a point that everyone in the opposition is unified to pass this report up to and including the Conservatives. So he is looking for 20 liberals to cross the floor and vote with the opposition and hopefully make Prime Minister Justin Trudeau rethink the choice of whether or not this will go forward, electoral reform.
This is a targeted thing then, so he had some hopes here, I guess.
Yes, this is very... He was in Toronto the weekend before, and then he was in Waterloo the night before this. I can't remember which water... Well, I mean, I think all the Kitchener-Waterloo MPs are liberal, but anyway, shall we play?
Let it rip.
All right.
Obviously, everyone who lives in Guelph thinks Guelph is important. Guelph is the center of the
universe.
Guelph
is important.
But for you, what makes stopping at Guelph an important stop on this tour for you?
Well, it's because of the incredible activity that's been going on in this town. I mean, people have been out and getting petitions signed and door knocking and meeting with their MP over and over again. That the easiest conversation to have is with people who are animated and engaged and want to do more, right? That they understand the importance of the issue and are just looking for more help to amplify their message and bring more and more Canadians and people in Guelph along for the ride to say that we can do better, we can expect better, and we should all just believe in a simple principle that if someone makes a promise, they should keep the promise.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you said a minute ago to one of the other people here was that it's become an issue about integrity. It's not necessarily about the issue of electoral reform. It's about integrity.
Well,
it's
about
keeping your word.
It's both, right? It is about the issue of a better voting system and making sure that every vote is counted and meaningful in Canada, that people have that power. It has also become a question of integrity, of the Prime Minister of Canada making solemn promises and then breaking them and hoping that there's no consequence. That's not the world I occupy.
Right.
Where I live, the way I was raised, your word is your bond. And Mr. Trudeau, even a couple of weeks before breaking this promise, said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't raised in such a way that you would break your promise. It's like, okay, well then what happened?
Yeah.
We just want better, that's all.
That is the oddity of this.
Is it
that
is so
one
odd.
One week it was, this is a thing that's happening, and then next week this is not a thing
And then you have to ask what changed.
Right.
Right? Did the evidence change? No. The evidence is compelling and overwhelming that proportional systems work better, would work for Canada. The willingness of the opposition, particularly the NDP and Greens, to sit down with the government and negotiate a fair way of getting the voting system in, all of those things remain true. The only thing that changed was Mr. Trudeau's word. And so we just got to bring him back. Just got to, well, maybe not him, but certainly his MPs, to say, who do you work for?
Right.
It's a really important fundamental question.
Mm-hmm.
You're standing in Parliament. Who do you work for? Do you work for the people who sent you there? Or do you work for the Prime Minister's office, who's cajoling, enticing, threatening, whatever it is that they do to try to get you to change your vote?
You struck an interesting tone tonight. It's not about blame. It's not about
ripping
Trudeau apart because this is a broken promise. It's about putting him back on track because, as you said, there's a reason he made this promise.
There must have been.
Right.
Like, he wasn't, you know, making it on a whim, and he repeated it hundreds and hundreds of times and was cheered hundreds and hundreds of times. So politicians don't generally make and repeat promises if they're ragingly unpopular or if they don't believe in them. So he must have believed in it.
And certainly not 1,600 times.
No.
If your staffer is to be believed in her count. Because I remember when Trudeau came to the University of Guelph, I think it was in 2013 when he was running for leader, and somebody asked him about PR, and he gave what I thought was a fairly concise answer about having list members, is concerned about having list members represent. So that was fascinating to me because it seemed like not a 180, but it certainly seemed like he had second thoughts, let's say, about.
Right. And so when people don't want to follow through on something, they start to grasp for excuses as to why it can't happen. The issue of lists or the issue of this or that or the other, we've answered all those questions. The Guelph Group has come up with a model that would work and answer the very, very specific problems the Liberals have raised.
Right.
So if you remove all of the barriers and the person still says no, then they just haven't told you the real barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And if the real barrier is that the Liberals worry about losing seats or losing power or losing their false majority, then just be honest with us.
Mm-hmm.
Don't treat people like fools because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're smarter than I think people in Ottawa realize.
Well, and I know as a natural pragmatic myself, I appreciate that you've been trying to tone down the antagonism because I know a lot of people are maybe upset at Lloyd Longfield for not being here tonight, but I know that he is not the enemy in this scenario.
No.
He's taken meetings with Democracy Guelph and with the community. He knows this matters to a lot of his constituents.
Yet it would be an interesting conversation to have with Lloyd to say, what about this conversation, which was very hopeful, very forward-looking, very smart. What about all of those things made you feel like you couldn't be here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is not threatening. These people are not threatening. They're your citizens. They're your constituents. We can have civil, open conversations with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm looking for. And that's all people here are looking for.
Right. You mentioned the local proportional representation plan.
Yes.
And you mentioned during the talk that you have 150-some-odd plans on your desk.
I have so many models. It's incredible.
In terms of your own ideas, is it not about your own ideas, or is this about like finding something that can work for everyone?
We set down some basic principles. Well, Parliament set down these principles that you would have an MP that was locally connected, that the system had to reflect the true will and vote of Canadians, like those sort of basic principles. There's at least half a dozen models out there that would tick all those boxes. And then it's just a question about what works best, what's most cost effective, what would give Canadians the most power in their vote. That's what matters to me. From the very beginning, publicly, privately, I've said to the government, we're open. We've got to hold on to those principles. We can't shake off those because that makes sense. But let's just work on this. And it's been very difficult to get them to that point even. So maybe over time, if their individual MPs are understanding the pressure that's placed upon them, they can bring that message back. Because as many Liberals have told me, they're not Ottawa's voice in their riding. They're their riding's voice to Ottawa.
Right.
Well, this riding is speaking very loudly, and I'm sure Lloyd's heard it and can understand that that's the message he has to bring back to his caucus and the Prime Minister.
And the message along with that, too, is that this was really top-down and that there are Liberals in the mix, and you talked about that tonight, that who are fairly disappointed.
Within the last 24 hours, one was publicly on the radio with me yesterday on CBC, a Liberal riding president, and the day before in Toronto, another Liberal riding president said, there's a pattern that's really worrisome to us as Liberals. There's been changes to our constitution. There's just this sort of internal top-down thing. Along with this PR vote, we're seeing what's going on in the House of Commons with the Liberals trying to push through rule changes that would give them total control. that is disturbing to a lot of liberal friends of mine who said, whoa, 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 this is not who we are as people. This is not the leader we supported through the leadership race. Excuse me. We expect a lot more democracy and a lot less top-down autocracy.
It's not the what they were sold to represent either.
No, no, and not what they believe. And right. So now if they condone it, if they support it, then they also become either liars or right. people who believe that the center should control all. And that's not who they are.
And you talked tonight about, you know, we need 20 liberals in order to pass the report. In terms of reaching back into the place where Justin Trudeau thought this was a great idea in the first place, because you see a lot of people coming out for this. You see huge crowds on cold winter's days coming out in support of this, and it's not just like here in Guelph or Toronto.
No, no,
it's
no.
It's all
and
over
mixed
the
mixed crowds.
Mixed crowds.
Right?
Sure.
Like I don't know, but I'm asking people who are in Guelph and familiar with everybody around, and they're saying, well, A, there's a lot of people here I don't recognize. They've never come out to political meetings. And those that I do recognize are coming from across the political spectrum. They're Greens. They're Liberals. They're New Democrats. There's conservatives showing up. That, to me, is real richness and wealth. If it's all siloed, if it's just sort of one very narrow part of the community, then it's easier for a politician to try to write it off. If it's across the spectrum, all these folks are connected to all sorts of other folks. And what we're seeing is people are coming from out of town.
Right.
People are coming in from London. People are coming in from Toronto. And, they want to take this back. And that's how these things grow. We talk about this being a root fire. Where it can spread and pop up in different places. That's where it starts to get real momentum.
And coming to multiple meetings in some cases.
Some folks are making this like you're going to form a band.
You sit across from Justin Trudeau. I'm not directly across, but so you get a chance to sort of see him in that natural habitat
That's
in Parliament
right.
Hill. So you must have some idea what's kind of going on. Does he feel this pressure? Is he hearing from his MPs behind closed doors like, hey, you're kind of going the wrong way on this?
I think so, but I can't confirm. I think he's convinced himself of the arguments that he's making. The problem for Justin is that they don't make any sense. And they don't hold up the evidence and the experience that people have had with this. That he made the promise, he repeated it, but then didn't even really have the courage to come out and break the promise himself. He sent out a rookie minister to fall on the sword.
With a letter.
Mandates don't come from letters. Right. Mandates come from voters. That's how it works. And so voters did not give him a mandate to break this promise. They gave him a very specific mandate to keep his promise. Get a better voting system. So why not do that? So anything beyond that is just sort of rationalization, I guess.
It is amazing how this has hung around.
Yes.
That most political promises are broken. People grumble a couple of days.
This one's deeper.
Yeah.
This one means more to people because it's fundamental.
Right.
It's about our democracy. And people also see the danger of a prime minister saying, well, I'm here now, everything's fine, which is one of his first arguments.
Right.
People don't want electoral reform anymore because they're happy because I'm here. It's like,
right.
Wait, we all just pass across the stage,
right.
And then other people come and take our places. And could another Stephen Harper come? Of course he could.
Sure. So what's the next phase in terms of what's coming up? Because the report's not done yet. I think a lot of people think the report is done and gone.
So what we do by the end of May is we bring that report in for a standing vote in the House of Commons. Every MP will have to vote, and then we're going to see where everybody stands.
And that was Nathan Cullen. And that
live
was
live in town. Well, it was live.
It was live when we recorded it.
Somewhat live.
As we were being shoved out of the door of the Civic
Museum. Yeah, you can really tell. It's like all the background noise. Get out. Get your stuff, Cullen. You've said your piece. Now leave.
It's understandable.
You too, Donaldson. Get out.
Yeah.
No, I love the museum. One of my favorite venues.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. And it was a good night. I think the tone of it was kind of more, going in was more adversarial, and a lot of people thought Lloyd Longfield was going to be there. Of course, if you had listened to the show before going, you would have known Lloyd wasn't going to be there.
Yes. I should mention that Adam has a great montage of the whole talk. You'll need to teach me that trick, how to do that with the photos. It was good. There's a complete copy of it on Guelph Politico.
Which is
at
guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And yeah, it's about an... I mean, the whole tape is about like an hour and a half long, but it's worth listening to. It's not just Cullen talking. There's a lot of Q&A. There's a lot of people wanting to know how to get active and how to get more involved and how to convince MPs. And if you listen to Cullen in that interview and then in his talk, he's fairly optimistic that there's quite a bit of liberal support for going forward with electoral reform.
So being Guelph, it's Q&A and then S for statement, because... It's true, isn't it? I didn't get to the questions yet, but I guarantee somebody's like, I just want to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I want to preface my question with a statement. Anyway.
We expect that in our unrelenting, no, what was the word again? Breathtaking.
Breathtaking.
Breathtaking activism. There's lots of talking.
And speaking of breathtaking, we have some wonderful music here coming up.
That's
and
great. We
some
can take a breather.
PSAs. And because, yeah, we were so busy during that pre-tape.
So busy. Talking about... Yeah, anyway.
We're going to take a break. This is Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU.
But it never made a sound. It never made a sound. The earth is again to the sea. Armies are falling, but I never made a sound, but I never made a sound.
You always go the other way.
Well, cameras are rolling, the mic is picking up. Heat is arising, and ain't it just your luck? You never thought it'd sound that way.
It was The Magic from their self-titled album, The Magic. I believe it was from 2008. And they supposedly have a live act that's not to be missed. And you can see it because they are playing the Kazoo Fest this weekend. And on this timetable, I have completely lost what The Magic are playing. They are playing Silence. And anytime I've been at Silence, nothing has been silent. Silence, 4:15 on Saturday, April 8th. There is so much going on, I couldn't begin to tell you because we don't have the time. Visit www.kazookazoo.ca for more information. And I think Adam and I are probably going to the Print Expo, which is also at Mitchell Hall. So
Silence is an ironic name for
Silence
that
is totally ironic because since last time I was there, my ears have rung consistently. So there you go.
I would not have guessed that.
Loudness. They call it loudness and somebody's playing feathers or something. Anyway. It's a Portlandia joke. There you go. Talk about Guelphlandia. What are we talking about now?
Now all I can think about is people playing feathers.
I've thrown you off.
So as you heard in the Nathan Cullen interview, he kind of inferred at it or mentioned it briefly. There are a number of rule changes in terms of how the House of Commons operates that the Liberals are currently exploring. It is in committee. The committee is in filibuster right now. I mean, big day for filibusters. Killing
everyone
them and
loves
keeping
a
them.
Filibuster, right? Or at least we love just saying the words.
Tell that to Mitch McConnell.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so the rules... I don't know about you, Scotty. Some of these don't seem that controversial to me, like eliminating Friday sittings. You know,
who doesn't want to eliminate Friday anything?
I mean, the House of Commons is open for like 4 hours on Friday. You know, maybe we can.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But
I don't even think the content is the issue. I think the problem that they're having is that normally when they make changes or try to make changes to House rules, they work on consensus.
Right,
and it sounds like, or at least the opposition, Conservatives and NDP working together, strange bedfellows, but it's true. It's actually happening. Tag team filibuster by the sounds of it, aren't happy with this because their perception of it, I guess, is that, you know, Bartosz Czager presented, and then I believe Scott Sims is connected as well, like made a procedural motion like this should go to study.
Right.
It sounds like they want to ram it through before they adjourn for the summer on the 2nd of June. For how long do they adjourn for? They're hardly there.
Yeah.
So
no,
that's part of the argument, too, about Fridays. It's like, well, we're hardly here. I mean, I know they're always doing work, as Lloyd Longfellow has proven. He always seems to be on the go. But not critiquing that. But and some of the other things, too, in particular, the Prime Minister's questions, it was sort of a strange, not a strange moment this week, but I think it was a bit of a strategy that backfired in that Justin Trudeau took all of the questions to kind of demonstrate this is what PM's question period will go like it is in the UK, which I think it's like Wednesdays or something, some middle of the week, Wednesday at noon, you can fire away at, Elizabeth May, like everybody does, Theresa May.
May.
Doesn't matter.
Different
But yeah, and then everybody said, well, hey, you can do that. You know, the rules haven't changed yet and you're already doing that. So why change the rules? It's like, and everybody was like, maybe. So... Yeah, I take it I haven't checked as the filibuster is ongoing.
So far as I know the they were still doing yesterday. I don't know.
Somebody's reading the phone book.
Like how the filibuster goes. You just have to fill the time. No more Friday sittings is one. Prime Minister only question period is another. I think one of the big things is they want to sort of rein in the ability to filibuster in committee, which is sort of being flagrantly
ironic. Exactly what's happening. They want to prevent
electronic voting instead of having all the MPs stand up and.
But wouldn't that save a ton of time? I mean, I would.
Yeah,
they do it everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but
They do it at City Hall,
and if there's a problem, somebody goes, "Well, wait a second." Yeah, the whole standing to vote is so archaic. It's.
But that's the thing is like, and I do get the point about the ramming through, and I think there may have been. I don't know. There may have been a difference between sort of message and how this has come about, because Bart Shager gets up and says, well, this is like a white paper. This is like some of our ideas we've written down. And you actually go on, you can actually go to the Government of Canada website and read the white paper. It's like not that long.
And then they campaigned on this too, right?
Some of it, yeah. Like the,
shouldn't be a surprise.
Friday, having no Friday sittings was something they campaigned on. I know that. But yeah, so it's. It's not that surprising. And then so she gets up and she says, well, this is a white paper, no big deal. We want to have a discussion. We can change some things. No problem. Let's talk about it. And then somebody else says, well, we can talk about it. It's got to be done by June 2nd or else. I don't know.
Sims? Yeah. That's
my Sims voice. I don't know if that's what he sounds like. But yeah, so I think that's what you were saying, that's the problem. I think, yeah, that's the problem. But I mean, I don't think what the intention was to sort of set it up as a ramming. And if it was, and if it really wasn't the intention, if when Bars Checker gets up and says, well, this is an idea thing, and then another member of the caucus says, no, this is a thing, so go pass it. Yeah, it seems like kind of screwed up messaging.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is that it's pretty obvious that if the tables were turned and it was still the Harper government they were trying this, the Liberals would lose their minds, right? So, you know, we'd see a similar outcry about this. So I heard Christensen, what's his first name again, from Hamilton? David Christensen, the MP.
Oh, yeah.
And his comment was, we need a system that works regardless of who is in the government. And I thought that was kind of, we need a system that works regardless. But again, as I said, they, if I understand it right, they've always sort of debated it together.
Right.
The big three, let's say. The big three and Elizabeth May.
One of the things that is interesting is that requiring a document to explain why you want a prorogue and then sending that document to committee for study before a prorogation.
Yeah.
Which, of course, seems like a sort of obvious swipe at the previous government who
for sure
liked to use prorogation when they got painted into a corner. So, I mean, that's...
The Liberals aren't beyond as well, at least at the provincial level. I mean, they were...
That's true, too.
Yeah, it's happened.
It has been done.
All the tools in the toolbox to keep yourself in power.
And then
that's the goal, right?
The speaker has the power. Give the speaker the power to divide omnibus bills. I'm not sure how
he needs a giant staff and he can just tap it. The bill has passed. Yeah, that would be cool.
This shall not pass. I do wonder how effective that would be because the speaker is usually from the governing party.
Partisan, man. Yeah. It's difficult, I suppose. Maybe you should have a speaker that isn't from the governing party.
Yes.
They could do that.
They could.
Somebody from the Senate. I don't know. Don Merritt? No. Bad idea.
Well, you know, speaking of Lynn Bayek is not on the Aboriginal committee.
Yes, and I think that was universally applauded, except for some conservatives took a shot at the media saying, what was the comment that they were... I should know this because I reposted it this morning. not biased, I don't know. Look it up, folks. We went right off topic there, but it's sort of still...
Well, it's worth noting because we've brought her up before. But,
Parasites. Called the media parasites.
Oh, sure.
Yes. It's so negative, I blocked it out of my mind. So there are other parasites in this country, and they're called the Senate. But anyway, my opinion only, people. That's not official. But.
Anyway, it does seem... this is kind of a fuster cluck all around. Because I think if you ever watch Question Period or...
Try to watch Question Period. Fair enough. Watch it devoutly. No, devoutly.
Even I can't watch Question Period.
No, I kind of go for the highlights, or you know.
But there is some need for change in the way we handle the business in the House. Somebody pointed out, I can't remember where I read it, but said like you want to take a first step to reforming the House. Get rid of this clapping stuff. Get rid of this standing O stuff. Whenever Rona Ambrose gets up to ask the first question, like yeah, she got up to ask a question. Woo! Because it seems, I mean, that's like rank and
maturity. Please hold your applause to the end clause wouldn't be too bad.
Right, and everyone's guilty of it, too. Because I remember when the NDP was in official opposition and Tom Mulcair would get up, it's like, yeah, he's going to rip him up! Rip him up! Yeah. So
mic drop. Yeah.
So, I mean, I just find it immature all around. And it's like, you want to start moderating behavior in the House, well, start by moderating your members and start whipping them. And, like, don't pull this crap. Don't make it look like we're putting on a show. This is a serious process. We're supposed to be serious people. You know? Yeah.
Don't elbow anybody.
You know?
Just saying. You know,
you're not up there to deliver a slam. Like, you're not supposed to ask the Prime Minister a question and then for the rest of the backbench go, oh, snap, no, she didn't. That's, you know, I find more problem.
Going, oh, behave. Yeah.
You know, because
with the magic
I do miss when Andrew Scheer was Speaker. And
he's pretty good with the jibe, saying
order,
a little jabby. Yeah.
Order. You know, he had that great voice that... When he's to sit to do that.
Maybe if he wins the gig, we'll.
Oh yeah, you know
it again. Maybe we'll get him on Open Sources. So we can.
He might do it.
Do that voice you did when you're with the speaker.
You might do it reflexively.
Do that voice
when he like gets up to ask you like order. Wait, yeah.
The Prime Minister.
Yeah. I feel like we've gotten off topic.
Completely derailed. But that's.
I think long
story
short.
We're filibustering now. We're just saying stuff. Friday, April 7th, we have 10 Boys Summer at the.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of these things I don't have a problem. Like, anything that sort of gets rid of, like, as we're seeing in the United States right now with them getting rid of the filibuster, this is can be. And when you're in power, it's an annoying thing. When you're not in power, it's a life saving democratic measure. It's a tool. Yeah. And so that's. That kind of gets me where I live. But, I mean, stuff like not sitting on a Friday. You know, there was one conservative MP who was, like, really upset about it. It's like, is it sitting for 4 hours on Friday super important to you? Or you just don't want to go home? Because it's...
Go ahead. Go sit on a Friday.
It's great. It's great if you live in, like, Kingston or Gatineau.
Yeah.
But, you know,
or Ottawa.
or Ottawa.
Polyam,
or,
right?
You know, Peterborough, or, you know, somewhere that's like relatively within
Toronto,
a good
not
driving.
Too bad, but
sure. I mean, it's a 1 hour flight if you live, or not even 1 hour flight from to Toronto.
Victoria, I guess Elizabeth May's probably logging a lot of miles. Maybe
well,
she just stays in town. You know, a lot of them probably stick around.
Well, she probably does a lot of traveling, being a party leader. But
you'd be like Mike Duffy and have a house in two places. You don't have to worry. Which one's the permanent residence? We'll never know. But anyway, another jab at the Senate.
Let's not paint Elizabeth May with that brush.
No, but I'm sort of segueing into the overpaid and underworked, maybe, possibly. I don't know.
Gotcha. Let's start with Bombardier, because this is kind of a surprising development that there were protests about this, that Bombardier... six executives getting a total compensation of $32 million after a year where they were like begging and pleading for not just the federal government, the Quebec government as well, for bailouts to help them with these C-Series planes. In the meantime, they're missing deadlines left, right, and center with TTC, with Metrolinx, even up the road, with the Ion. They delivered one train, and that train is supposed to go online later this year. So, and then they're giving themselves these incredibly awesome bonus packages. These the $32 million, of course, is salary, bonuses, and benefits. So it's like the total package. But still, these people aren't really earning. I mean, if your goal is to get a thing done, build it on time, on budget, and get it to the buyer, when you said you were going to get it to them, they are not certainly meeting their job requirements.
Well, and that said, it works out to a 50% pay hike. Mm. But a bonus, you get a bonus when you've done well.
Sure.
And if the government is bailing you out and you're missing all of your deadlines, I don't think you've done well. I don't think you've done 50% well. I mean, I think I do well at my job and I get a raise that's equal to like inflation. and I'm supposed to be happy. That's not even equal to inflation. And you're supposed to be happy with that. It's like 1.5%. And I know I don't want to, you know, there's lots of people that don't get raises at all for that matter, but 50% on the millions and 32 million, especially, I'm so glad people got out and protested this for sure, because, well, they did, they're like, oh, we're going to roll it back a bit. But I think when the outcry disappears very quietly, there's going to be some shares going to be moved. That's me making the sound of shares moving across the table very quietly when things have calmed down. But yeah, just absolute ridiculousness. Also ridiculous too, and this is a bit of an aside too, the Phoenix executives, the worst implemented federal program around, and they all got pay hikes to some degree. I sort of caught that before airtime, but the Phoenix executives have also gotten performance bonuses, but their performance was lousy.
Which is weird, because I think there's still people who aren't getting their pay.
Yes. It's like, okay, there's tons of federal public servants not getting paid. But well, we're not only getting paid, we're going to get a raise.
They
it's
probably
ridiculous.
Don't get paid via Phoenix either.
They have to bring the hammer down completely on these clowns. I mean, absolutely. I think regardless of your political cut or whatever, it's like, why, like, no wonder there's outcry. And of course, it's always this time of year around tax time. Every year it's like, oh, the executives are getting this. And of course, the Sunshine List.
You want to talk about Sunshine
List? Oh, I'm itching to talk about Sunshine List because we're running out of time.
I don't care, but you go talk about Sunshine
Adam
List.
Adam says he doesn't care about the Sunshine List, but he should. And we do. We talk about it every year. And there was a third, too, the Trudeau's technician that was on the Aga Khan tour.
Oh, yeah.
The Aga Khan got reimbursed $1,600 for the tech. What kind of tech? I don't know. Make sure the Wi-Fi is working in his room?
Maybe.
You think the Aga Khan would have Wi-Fi, like, on the whole island. But, so the Aga Khan got $1,600 of Canadian money. This is when I start to sound like a rabid right-winger. Like, if you didn't know me and hadn't heard any of the rest of the show, Sunshine List come out and the executives get their corporate welfare, and I'm like, meh, I just lose it. I don't know why I love this so much.
Neither do I.
I don't know either. It's something inherent in that when you feel somebody's getting something that they haven't really earned, and that,
well,
you know,
I think that's an overstatement.
No, well, what do you mean?
Well, I think
you don't. You think they all earn their compensation? You think that the guy is getting $1.5 million at the top of?
I think that's an outlier. I think when we're, but
the,
I think
well, the outlier
you can't
is the
that
janitor
everyone,
that's on the list, right? That's the low end. They always the
well,
national
there, there are different
always,
outliers. There are different outliers.
The outliers people think, lose their minds over is when the janitor gets $100,000. The guy that works 365 days.
Well,
a year.
There are also a lot of police officers who
yes,
who are
four of
list.
Whom are suspended.
Well, there are that. I mean, that's probably the most problematic thing I find about this is that there are multiple suspended officers who are still pulling in their 6-figure salaries. Okay, but
it's littered with cops.
When you eliminate, like, the people who are making 7 figures and, like,
well,
those kind of execs.
I know what you mean.
When you're talking about, like, you're talking about teachers, you're talking about doctors, you're talking about, you know, professionals, people who have been in their ministries, dedicated civil servants for a long time. I found this blah, 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 editorial on the Hamilton Spectator, and he points out that the publication of the Sunshine List, although important, transparent, all that, really I think that's important as well. It creates a climate of hostility and polarization, and it shouldn't be licensed for public vilification and bald-faced envy. Because there are a lot of people on that list who put in a lot of overtime, are very dedicated public servants, who do a good job. They don't make a lot of noise, either, you know, because they're not. Yeah, they don't stand under the radar because they're not, you know, in it for the fame or the glory. Or, you know, otherwise their position doesn't create fame and glory. Like if they're a history teacher or something like that. So I think it's...
Should a history teacher make $100,000?
Well, why should...
It's a philosophical question.
Why should a,
we should
a
all
hockey,
make $100,000.
Why should a hockey player make tens of millions of dollars?
That's, a topic for another day.
I mean, people pull their hair out over
why should a guy in the OHL make nothing?
Making $103,000. But think of nothing when they sign Jose Bautista to like a 5-year contract where he makes $100 million. I don't know if that's how much he makes. I'm just pulling those numbers in my butt. Meanwhile, you want to go to see a Blue Jays game at the Sky Dome. It's gonna, you know, it's gonna cost you a month's salary to go see if you're a regular Joe working guy. But nobody has a problem with Jose Bautista. And that's not, and it's not just the players, it's guys in the front office, it's the coaches, it's the upper management. And I know that the Blue Jays aren't paid through our tax dollars, which seems to be the...
Well, they got Skydome for a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
Rogers
that's it. They get a lot of concessions.
A $500 million facility for $25 million because it was decrepit, and then all of a sudden it's fine for baseball. How come?
Yeah.
There you go.
So I like that line from the Hamilton Spectator.
That's good. That's a good way to put it because, everybody draws the line differently. Like if I had my way, like probably every nurse in Ontario would be on the Sunshine List or close to it.
Sure.
But that's, and then I always love the argument too, when it's like for years here at the university, well, let's get to the university, which has, what is it, 800 people on the list?
It's 800 and change.
Yeah. And there was one year years ago where there was a 53-week pay week. And then the list I think then was 400 people, and then it became 800 people. And that was the excuse it was used. Like, well, there was an extra pay week. So, you know, for everybody that's on the Sunshine List, there are tons that are at like 99,000, right?
Or whatever. Sure.
So maybe it isn't an accurate measure overall.
And I should point out, too, that the Liberals put the Sunshine List down from 150K to 100K.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't actually know that.
It used to be 150K.
Oh, wow. So it incorporated all the...
Yeah.
The little guys making $110,000. Save one for the little guy who, yeah.
But I mean, I it's just something I cannot get my dander up about because it just seems like it seems like we're attacking the wrong people. If somebody,
Some of the wrong people.
Attacking the Bombardier guys, absolutely. Attack them all the live long day because you have a job, you're supposed to do the job, and to get a bonus, you're supposed to do better than the bare minimum of what's expected to you at your job.
Well, I think the problem with the people have in particular when they, the outliers, you talk about the high rollers, specifically with hydro.
Sure.
Now, there was the argument made by Glenn Thibault. Was saying that the costs of, you know, we need to keep Liash is the top guy, Jeff Liash, he's the guy at $1.53 million, which is up from 1.16, so he had like a $500,000 bonus that wasn't recorded, right? So why head of the nuclear division, isn't he? I think so. Anyway, so but it was Thibault was saying that the nothing on his in his wages or anything from a hydro bill is anything to do with this guy's wages. But, I mean, that's not the point.
No.
We pay their wages. And I think that's why people sort of get ramped up when they're getting hosed for their hydro bill. This guy's getting another $500,000 a year. You might be making 50 if you're lucky, and you're having a hell of a time paying the hydro bill.
Hydro seems to be the straw man in this. And it's not like an unjustified straw man because we keep hearing about rates going up. We're out of control hikes. People not being able to afford hydro in rural areas.
Yeah.
And then you have all these people in executive positions making a lot of money. And it's like, well, if you're going to save people money one place, you know, would it, even just for appearance's sake, would you not just say, okay, I'm going to take a pay cut until we get this situation under control? You can go from $700,000 to $500,000 and still live incredibly, incredibly comfortably.
Mm.
And it would be a PR stunt. You and I would see it as a PR stunt, but
I want complete accountability.
Sure.
For something that, because it's like it just keeps going up, and the compensation goes up. Whether it's Bombardier's goes up and they were given federal money, or the province goes up, it's our money. That's me sounding like a conservative again. It's our money. I'm a taxpayer, damn it. But it's true, though. The list is over. What? How many total were on the list? Was it like 150,000 people? Wasn't that something?
I can't remember.
Pulled that number out of my head. But it just, every time I look at it,
I spent an hour scouring it to get all the Guelph numbers.
It just, it blows, like the spreadsheet blows up because there's so many people on it.
Right.
Is it too high? I don't know. Yeah, you scoured all the Guelph people. Are there any highlights you remember from your scour?
Not really. I mean, like, there's like 300 and change at the city of Guelph, and about a little over half of them are police officers.
Mm.
I mean, I did find that interesting. I'm not saying that the police officers don't deserve it. I just found that interesting. That
never got right. The police slice of the Guelph budget is the largest slice of our budget.
I believe so.
Hmm. And a new headquarters.
Well, that's another subject altogether.
Yeah.
Speaking of conservatives,
we'll save that for
speaking of conservatives, it is going to be a busy couple of weeks here if you like conservative politics. Next week, Rick Peterson, who we mentioned earlier in the show, a conservative leadership candidate, will be phoning in from Vancouver. And then on April the 20th, we will be having Michael Harris, Kitchener-Conestoga MPP, here live in studio. And the week after that, we will likely be having our Earth Day show, which is conservation, not conservative. But guests to be announced, because we're still trying to work out the guest list for that. And then on May the 4th, Dan Gibson, Ward 1 counselor, been in the news a lot lately with some of his motions. He'll be in to talk about all of that's going on at City Hall. And when we know more, we will let you know. OpenSourcesGuelph.com, OpenSourcesNewswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, go to Guelph Politicast to find this in all previous episodes of Open Sources. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or GuelphPolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and, of course, the Spanner Book.
And we will see you next week. And in the meantime, stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU. 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.